Hi, Denise. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. So for those listening who obviously weren't part of our previous conversation off air, Rich and I have had what you could call a back and forth trying to get hold of each other between me avoiding his invitations to go running and him not being able to get the recording situation set up. But I've finally got him. And today I'm very happy to be talking to Mr. Richard Casement, founder of Clean Break Brewing. So let's show everybody your fabulous cans. Not sure how well they can be seen there, but I'll make sure everyone can see them. Hello, thank you for joining me. It's so good to have you here. How is life in Leeds?
Yeah, it's good. We got there in the end, didn't we, Denise? That was it was funny, wasn't it, trying to sort that stuff out. And no, life in Leeds is good. It's warm at the moment, as I'm sure it is everywhere in the UK. Yeah, which is weird because we've kind of had summer that was before summer holidays and then rubbish in the summer holidays, and then literally the weekend before the kids go back to school, it's like, summer's appeared and it's autumn. So thanks for that.
I know, it's crazy. My big one went back to school, first day back to school today, because the first 2 days were inset days, and he went back to school today, and it's 31 degrees in my part of London, so I'm near Sutton, and it's just ridiculous. And I've got obviously the windows closed here for the recording sound and everything, but then I've got like just sun glaring in on me, so if I melt whilst you're talking, don't take it personally.
Maybe you need a cold clean break when you've finished, Denise. I do feel sorry for the kids when they've gone back and they just come out like a big red glowing beetroot sweaty mess, and they're just tired and irritable and they're not back into routine yet, and you're just like, oh god.
It's gonna be a fun afternoon. But let's talk about you, Rich. So I'm so glad I finally got you, and I'm not going to tempt fate by risking it too long. So I want to get straight into it. So could you take me back to your beginning and tell me a little bit of the story of Richard? Do you prefer Rich or Richard?
I tend to prefer Rich these days, yeah.
All right. So tell me the story of Rich and how he came to be where you are today with Clean Break.
Yeah, well, So my working career, if you like, has always been entwined with alcohol, if I'm honest with you. I left school and, like many did, sort of worked in pubs and bars, took a year out, funded that travelling through working in pubs and bars. And I think it was at that point where I sort of found a love and appreciation for hospitality. And then I went to university and started studying landscape architecture of all things. I don't know why, really, on reflection, but was quite creative at school and thought it was a good option. Came up to Leeds, where I live still now. That didn't work out. Realised it wasn't for me. Took a step back. Went back home a little bit with my tail between my legs, to be honest with you. Still got the old, you've got to get some education, you've got to get some further education kind of approach from parents, and kind of sort of thought at the stage, yeah, going to university was really important. So I went back the following September to study back up to Leeds, because I loved Leeds and made a really good group of mates, to study hospitality management. So yeah, kind of threw myself into this world of hospitality then, and did the first year, went and did a placement year. Part of that placement year, 6 months I spent in Miami on South Beach working for a hotel, bar and restaurant there, which was quite an experience as a 21-year-old English lad. You can imagine it was, it was good fun. There was some hedonistic times out there that happened. And, you know, this was, God, Christ, it's going back to like 2021. So it's 22 years ago now. Feels like an eternity ago, but it was fantastic. And had 6 months there and then 6 month placement finishing off in the UK. And I then went back to uni and kind of quickly realized, actually, I don't really need to get a degree to follow my, at the time, was my career choice and my passion, which was hospitality. So I ended up quitting uni for the second time. So yeah, that's a pretty bad record for higher education. And went straight into sort of management training with the company that I'd done the second 6 month placement with here in Leeds. And that then followed a really rewarding 6 or 7 years with them, kind of climbing the ranks through managing those bars, And worked with some incredible people who are still within the hospitality industry and some quite well-known sort of faces, really. So was really lucky to have the privilege of working with some, you know, some incredible hospitality individuals. And that really paved the way for me for a sort of a, the next few years, really, in terms of kind of a love and appreciation of the drinks industry, the supply chain, hospitality, all that kind of stuff. And when I got towards the end of my 20s, I sort of, like I think a lot of people do, kind of recognized that the lifestyle probably wasn't conducive to where I was at in life. Lots of sacrifices you make working in hospitality, as you well know, you know, kind of missing Christmases. And I think I missed like my dad's sort of 60th or 50th or 60th birthday, one of those big milestone birthdays. Sacrificed lots of, you know, bank holiday weekends and things like that with my friends for the career, and kind of got to the point where I thought, actually, you know, I'm either going to go down the route of opening my own venue, which I couldn't really justify financially at the time, or, you know, I was going to go down a different career path. And it took me into, that's when it sort of started into sales roles, really. And I started actually recruiting people, recruiting managers for bars and restaurants nationwide, before then going into sales roles within alcohol. And my first experience of that was at the sort of the entry point, which was a brand ambassador for a vodka brand at the time. This was back in 2020. So I remember distinctly getting the offer letter for the job, because the offer letter came through on my 30th birthday. And I remember it coming through the door. And I think myself and my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, we were living in a pokey little flat, and we'd met at the recruitment company where we both worked, and just kind of fallen for each other there. But that was a family run business by a couple, and sadly it went into administration, and we both ended up getting made redundant at the end of, what was it, the end of 2008, I think it was, which was the financial crash. So we'd gone through a period when we first got together of instability in jobs and work and income and things like that. So when that job offer letter came through, it was a really big milestone moment, sort of a celebration, not least turning 30, but also this job. And that was sort of the start of my career in the drinks industry. And what followed was sort of 10, 12 years of kind of pretty consistent progression up through the ranks in different roles, regional sales roles, into kind of national account management. And it paved the way for me to work in lots of really exciting different businesses that are, you know, kind of well regarded drinks brands, alcohol drinks brands in the globally, not just in the UK. And also within sort of a supply chain, within a wholesaler role. And yeah, just kind of a really fulfilling, enjoying career, which at many times didn't really feel like a job. It felt like a hobby. You know, it was kind of that, you know, my friends would always say to me, "You haven't really got a real job, have you? You just go out there peddling booze," and, you know, was constantly around booze. So, you know, alcohol was my life inside of work, as well as it was outside of work. You know, I was always the guy that was handed the wine menu at the dinner table, or, you know, I would bring the fancy bottle of spirits to a party and be, you know, asked to make some cocktails and things like that. So, you know, for the best part of, you know, for my entire, 20s and 30s, really, my life was wrapped up. So it's sort of two decades, really. My life was wrapped up in alcohol. And it essentially, what I ended up doing was building an identity around booze. And it was great, and it was loads of fun whilst it lasted. But I think as I got towards my 40s, we had kids, 2014, our son arrived. My relationship as a consumer of alcohol started to change. You know, you find when you've got kids, as you know, it's not conducive to having a hangover in the slightest. You know, lack of sleep, grumpy, irritable, headaches, you know, all that kind of stuff is not good when you're trying to raise a family. So as a consumer of alcohol, my consumption level started to go down anyway quite rapidly, and especially through the week. And, you know, and what happens with that is a cycle of, you know, you're drinking less, so your tolerance goes down less. So when your tolerance goes down less, it means you want to drink less. And it's just a perpetual cycle like that, to the point whereby I kind of found myself at towards the end of my 30s and my early 40s, like just starting to really struggle, if I'm honest with you, you know, just even like a couple of pints, I would go to bed, waking up and, you know, get to sleep sedated, more like, and then wake up kind of in the middle of the night, A, needing the toilet, and B, feeling like someone was sat on my chest with this kind of weird, like anxious feeling of God, like palpitations and like, oh my God, you know, what's going on? And then just a really fuzzy, cloudy head. And that then led into obviously the lockdowns and the pandemic as we know it. Just before the pandemic hit, I landed what was essentially a dream job for me, working with a spirit brand owner that had brands that were like spirit brands that I admired as a bartender. So I'd known them for like 15, 20 years and brands that I'd admired as a bartender in my jobs and as a consumer as well. So it was like, it was a dream job for me at the time. And it was to go and essentially run and set up their national account distribution channel across on-trade, hospitality group, pub groups and operators nationwide. So that was amazing. It was like, yeah, I'd achieved my kind of my goal, my dream, you know, to get to this point. But I think in hindsight, subconsciously, I think at the time I probably knew, I probably, whether I was aware or not, I think I'd sort of started to check out a little bit of it. My real passion and my joy and my love of it had sort of had dissipated a little bit. Not my love of the people and the industry, the hospitality industry, but I think booze. And I think, again, in hindsight, it's really easy to look back now. And I've done a lot of the looking back in recent times, you know, now almost 20 months alcohol free. But I think now I look back and I think I just spent too much time in and around booze and I just lost interest in it. I think it's like anything in life. If you do have too much of a good thing, you kind of end up like getting a bit bored of it. And anyway, so I started the job and then a month later, the pandemic hit. So it was like, right, work from home and then quickly furlough. We all know how that sort of panned out. And the hospitality industry took a massive beating and we were kind of on off furlough for about a year and a half. When we finally went back to work, I really struggled to get back into it. Motivation, really poor mental health. Now again on reflection, I think the impact of the pandemic was for me personally started to come clear that period. And I just sensed that something wasn't right internally and I couldn't put my finger on it. And I ended up, I'd done some therapy, didn't work for me. I ended up at the end of 2021, decided to take a break from drinking. At the time I wasn't honest with myself and I wasn't honest with other people. And they asked me by saying that I'm taking a break from alcohol because I feel that it's having a negative effect on my mental health. I said that I was doing it for the benefit of my training. I was training for a half iron distance triathlon event. So it's almost like I felt I needed an excuse. Like, how weird is that? I needed a justification to say why I wasn't drinking alcohol because I felt embarrassed about the fact that, you know, I probably knew deep down inside it was having a detrimental effect on my mental health. So I took that break. And at the time, I think I knew that if I went the 6 months alcohol free to the event, I probably would go beyond that as well, you know. And then I didn't really at the time think about the impact it was going to have on my career. But within a couple of months, it started to become clear that actually I felt in conflict. I felt like a hypocrite. On one hand, I was actively distancing myself from the thing that I was meant to be in work, getting excited about and promoting and selling. And I just felt really conflicted. And again, that was a difficult period, mental health-wise, trying to work out what I was doing, where I was going, because my identity was wrapped up in this. So it's kind of like, well, if I leave this career that I've had for 20-plus years, who am I? What do I do? Had no real qualifications, didn't really know any other industry, and just felt a bit of a loss. But I think deep down inside, I knew I needed to break away from it. I knew it was the right time to leave that career. So I made the leap and I found it. I landed a job, which was a good segue out of what I was doing. Then, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew what I didn't want to do anymore. And that was sell booze. And I'd worked on my sort of limiting self-beliefs and my mental health with an NLP coach at the start of 2021, just after I'd stopped drinking. And that was transformational really for me in terms of finding the belief in myself and kind of trying to work on some of these limiting self-beliefs and some of this sort of paradigm mindset switch that kind of thing. Making small but not easy changes to sort of daily habits, I think, was key. You know, some of the stuff that a lot of people think, oh, it's a bit woo-woo, you know, like daily gratuity, mindfulness, meditation, you know, all these kind of things that you know, are small changes but not necessarily easy to make. But they had a great impact on me. And so I started this new job in this time last year, actually. It was September last year. Wasn't really something that I was particularly enamored with, like the selling the product that I was doing. It wasn't something that really was, gave me sort of wasn't passionate about as I was previously about alcohol, but knew it was a good way out. Anyway, it didn't work out. 2 months in, I wasn't right for them. They weren't right for me. And we went our separate ways. And I remember my line managers bringing me in on the Monday and sitting me down, my 3 month appraisal within my probation period, and just saying, and I kind of knew in my head that it wasn't working out. But he sat me down, he said, this probably isn't going to go the way you're expecting it to. We're not going to renew your contract. We're going to let you go from today. And I sat there for a few seconds and sort of processed this and turned to him and I just said, thank you. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, I've had this idea for this brand, this alcohol-free beer brand, Clean Break. It started life as a name of a book originally, but realised that probably wasn't the best source of income, but then realised it. I really liked the name Clean Break, and I thought there's something in there because it represented so much to me taking a clean break, making a clean break from an old career. You know, you take a clean break, have a clean break interspersed with every pint you have. So I sort of saw something in this name for this idea for this beer brand, and I just said, thank you. You've given me the opportunity to go away and pursue my goals and my dreams and do something which I've aspired to do for many years, and having worked on my limiting self-beliefs, I kind of had this, you know, change of the feeling of the fear of failure kind of had now become the fear of missing out and doing something that could be really cool. So that was that, and then just threw myself into it. So the last 9 months has been essentially doing that. We remortgaged the house at the same time, which was convenient because it helped me put a bit of money into the business. It wasn't what we intended to use the money for, but needs must. And you know, we did that. And I went through the process and got to June this year, beginning of June, when Clean Break officially launched. So we're just over, what's the date today? So I think we're like 3 months almost to the date, actually.
Amazing. Rich, that's one hell of a story. There's so much to unpack there. I like listening to your story because for me, it's like listening to somebody talk about my life in a parallel universe. There are so many similarities, and I completely get where you're coming from on all of it. That 24 years for me in hospitality and bars, and you're right, it becomes your identity, doesn't it? It becomes who you are. You are the person that runs the bar. You get to, you always choose the drinks, you know, you're always asked the questions. If you're not part of that, you're like, well, this, who else am I? Yeah. And moving on from that is such a huge step. Like you, I lost my job. Mine was redundancy during COVID while I was on maternity leave with my second. And part of me was so grateful for it because I just thought, I can't go back into doing this anymore. I can't go back into just, I always used to say for the last 20 years, my job is getting people drunk. And I started to realize that I didn't want to get myself drunk anymore. It was just not doing me any positivity. And so I completely hear where you're coming from. I love that you had the idea of Clean Break and that was something that you grew it from. So you say you wanted to write a book. Is that something that you started? Have you ventured into that? Have you put pen to paper or finger to keyboard?
No, not yet. It was an idea. I remember sat in the car with my wife and I came up with, and I was thinking it, and I just came out and spurted it out to her. I said, I'm going to write a book. And she looked at me and went, what? And I went, yeah, I'm going to write a book about my experience. Cause I'd kind of got to the point at this stage, it was just before this time last summer, June, July. And I felt like I'd got to a really good place in my alcohol-free journey. And I was kind of moving into the good stuff and away from the kind of, you know, that FOMO and overcoming, you know, any, you know, sort of physical connection or addiction, or not addiction, but need to drink alcohol. Yeah. And I said, oh, you know, I feel like I'm in a good place, and I feel like I could use my experience to help other people. And I said, and I came up with this idea, clean break, my messy divorce from alcohol. So I probably still write that as a bit of a spoiler. I've let everyone know about the book title, but
you might need to go and patent that title or something, Richard. You know, yeah. Go into IP stamp on there of some sort.
Yeah, well, I've got the IP on the brand name for the beer.
Yeah.
And a couple of other bits as well. But yeah, you're right, I might do. But I have been on and off journaling. Again, one of those things, one of those sort of good, healthy changes and habits that I've tried to build into my life now. And I've tried to journal wherever I can. I feel like the journaling is perhaps me writing the sort of latter stages of the book, if you like. So I think, yeah, and I think it's too early in the part of the journey that I'm on at the moment for me to start writing that book, because I think there's so much that's going to come. You know, it's Clean Break is only 3 months old. There's so much to come for Clean Break, which would form, you know, a really, you know, exciting and interesting part of a book. So I think it's too early to start doing that, but I will.
Well, when you do, then I want the exclusive. I want to help you get it out there, all right? So
100%.
So I would like to talk a little bit about Clean Break itself. So you've been going for 3 months now, and you've gone on a hell of a journey since you started. One of the things I love about you, Rich, and I mentioned this to you before in a previous message, is your openness around what you're doing and how you're building your business and the challenges and the struggles that you have is so admirable. You inspired me to be more open and more honest with my followers and my tribe and my people about what I was going through, and it helped no end. And I think that is to be commended. So hats off to you for that. You've gone through a lot of challenges getting this beer out to market in the 3 months since it's been launched. You've also faced a few challenges. Tell us a little bit about the journey that it's been on. Let's start with the beer itself. What does it taste like? And then take me down that path with you.
Yeah, well, yeah, lots to chat about there. Yeah, in terms of the open and honest thing, yeah, being open and honest is one of the brand values that we live by with Clean Break, and one of my own brand values as well. When I say we, it's not really a we. There's me and Kristen, who does social media, who helps you as well. And then I've also brought in now someone who I really respect to help me on marketing as well, who's come on board. And I'll probably make a post about that a little bit later to share that news, but really excited for that. But being open and honest is one of the brand values and one of the values that I sort of live my life to. And I think it's really important, you know, when you're a founder-led brand, you know, and being open and honest about the journey and what you've done to kind of create that authenticity, which I think people keep on telling me that consumers buy into authentic brands. And for me, it's, I've always worn my heart on my sleeve, if I'm honest with you. You know, I've always been an open and honest guy, in some ways, perhaps too much. But, you know, I've got nothing to hide, you know, and I think, again, since going on this alcohol-free journey, you know, I don't have that element of that sense of having anything to hide anymore. You know, I'm sort of very proud of what I'm doing now. And I think shouting about that is really important. I listened to a podcast the other day, funny enough, going on a bit of a tangent now, but this lady was talking about, she's written a book called Say It Out Loud. I can't remember the name, but it was on the Hal Elrod podcast, Achieving Your Goals podcast. And the book was called Say It Out Loud, or is called Say It Out Loud. And she's talking about how important it is when we say things out loud, like we do to other people. Like if we're giving someone a compliment, you know, we'd say, mm-hmm. Oh, you look great, or well done, or, you know, we give them, you know, we praise them out loud. And, you know, we don't do that to ourselves. You know, we say it internally, but we don't say it out loud. So I think by saying things out loud and being open and honest with myself and with other people on social media, on LinkedIn and things like that, it kind of reiterates that mindset, that positive mindset, but also it kind of gives me an element of accountability. You know, it makes me accountable to all the people that I'm saying this stuff to, because it's like, if I don't do this stuff that I'm saying, then, you know, they're going to hold me accountable. So that's the reason for that. In terms of the liquid, yeah, it's been a really iterative process, actually. And I've been lucky to work with some great people in the industry. One of the first people I reached out to was Jordan Charles at Mash Gang. I tried one of their collaboration beers with a brewery local to me in Yorkshire called Vocation Brewery. And it was before I sort of officially made the leap to do this. And I tried this beer in one of their Vocation pubs, and it was brilliant. It was the one of the best alcohol-free beers I tried at the time. And I said to the guy by the bar, I said, "That is banging." I said, do you brew this? He's like, "Yeah, we do. It's a collab with Mash Gang." And I was like, "I've never heard of Mash Gang at this point." So when I did a bit of research, saw that they were obviously kind of doing some great stuff in the market, in the category. And I thought, well, this guy Jordan looks like someone I need to be speaking to get some advice and direction. And you know, thank God I did, because you know, he's been probably the main guiding light for me in terms of you know, not just supporting me with the development of the recipe, but also just as a someone to lean on and someone to act as sort of devil's advocate. And you know, he's really open and honest himself as well, and he speaks his mind and he says how it is, and I really like that. You know, I don't get offended by people telling me something that might not be what I want to hear, but it's what I need to hear, and he's done that throughout the process. So, you know, I can't thank him enough for the work that he did into helping me develop the recipe. So the liquid is, my brief to Jordan was to create a beer that is, you know, something for every occasion, essentially. I wanted to, one of the driving factors for me in creating Clean Break was my whys, if you like, was when I first stopped drinking, I got some of the least supportive comments from people closest to me, you know, friends who still drink. And it was kind of like not knowingly critical or not trying to hurt me in any way. But, you know, comments like, "I can't support that," or "How long are you going to keep this up for?" Or "You can't stop drinking, all your mates and your wife drink," or "Bore off." You know, these kind of sort of comments, which we've all had, people who take a break from alcohol have all had, you know, because of this weird sort of dynamic that we have as a society with alcohol, thinking that we have to drink it. So that was one of those are sort of the things that spurred me on. So when I was thinking about the recipe, I wanted to create a product that I could be proud to put in front of my friends and say, you know, "Look, try this, you know, see what you think of this." And for them to say, "Oh, that's great," you know, and then we'd say, "Well, it's alcohol free and it's, you know, it's mine." So that was one of the motivating factors. And so a beer for every occasion and landing somewhere between sort of your clean, crisp, kind of refreshing lager and your more hoppy lead, more hop forward flavor IPA, somewhere that was a kind of an in-between, sort of a halfway post, really, if you like, and kind of landed on the idea of a pale ale, really, which has an element of both. So, you know, kind of did a lot of research into products that are out there on the market, got some inspiration from some of the ones that I liked, and yeah, sort of put together this brief for Jordan of what I was looking for. And it was a pretty thorough brief, really. And I remember the first cans coming off the brew line at my brew partner up in Hexham in the north near Newcastle, Allendale Brewery. Again, another partner that I need to offer thanks and praise for, because they've been great. But I remember those first cans coming off the brew line. I said to Neil up there, I was like, "Well, yeah, can I pick up a can?" He's like, "You can do what you want with it, Rich. It's your bloody beer." I was like, "All right, okay, that's a pretty cool." Yeah. Picked up a can off the brew line, freshly canned, opened the can, cracked it open. That feeling, that noise, that psh, that first can, took a sip. And I was just like, "That is better than I could ever have imagined." And it just was like one of those milestone moments, you know, pinch me moments. And there's been so many of those on the journey so far, where I was just like, "Wow, that tastes great," and really hit the brief, you know, perfectly. So really pleased with how the liquid's come out. It uses Citra hops, which a lot of people will know, but then also two sort of lesser known hops, El Dorado and one called Nelson Savan. There's a bit of wheat in the mash bill, which gives a bit of texture, a little bit of richness, to a bit of body to the beer as well, because, you know, when you've not got the alcohol carries a lot of texture and sort of mouthfeel, really, more than anything else. So, you know, trying to replicate that is one of the challenges with alcohol-free products. So the wheat gives it that bit of alcohol-free. So it's not gluten-free, but it's vegan. And it's been heavily inspired by my love and experiences of running in recent years. And you know, when I think about my running and my alcohol-free journey and my running journey, they've dovetailed with each other, and they've been the two most transformational experiences and things in my life in recent years, which have helped me make positive progress. I wanted to use the influences and my experiences and my love of running in some way to bring into the beer. So it's named Klingbeek Progression Pale Ale. Mm-hmm. So progression partly representing my progression over the last couple of years from, you know, being in a not a great place with my mental health, you know, to making progression myself in my own life, but also progression being one of my favorite types of run, where you start slow and you get quicker and you build up. It's a type of run that I love. And then that device on the front, yeah, that's my, I was looking at my Strava graph of a progression run one day, and I thought, oh, that'd be a really cool thing to try and add on to the can of the beer. So me and my designer, Mike Williams from the Brewers Design Society, someone else I need to shout out, actually, we worked on this idea of using the progression bar graph device on the front, and that's what that represents. And then on the back, you've also got the blue and white kind of box, which is my representation of like a race bib. So if you did a marathon or a half marathon, you'd have your name and your number on your race bib, and it's got Klingbeek and a bit of information about the brand. And then there's the sort of positive progress plan, which I call it, which is my commitment to sort of to helping others, really. And you know, from day dot, I kind of made this promise, if you like, that I realized I had an opportunity to not just do something great for myself and my family, but also to help others. And the positive progress plan really is my commitment to always doing what feels right and helping others feel great. And with this, I donate 10 pence per unit sold to two organizations. The retail sales go anything through D2C, my website, or through retail sales, go to the running charity, who do some fantastic work with young people who are either homeless or at risk of homelessness. So helping them build better life skills around, you know, through the idea of training for events and runs and things that seem unachievable at first, i.e. take a marathon as a prime example. You know, when you first look at that concept of running a marathon, for a lot of people, it's like, no way can I do that. But how do you eat an elephant? You know, you break it down into small manageable chunks, you know, and you start by putting every block in the wall from the foundations upwards, and you build the wall brick by brick. And it's that idea which I really bought into when I first chatted to Alex Eagle, who's the CEO, the founder of the charity. And I thought, yeah, this is an organization. This is something I want to support and be on board with. And then my hospitality partner organization, charitable organization, they're actually a social enterprise, not-for-profit social enterprise, but it's the Burnt Chef Project, who do a lot of fantastic work globally, actually, now. Chris Hall is the founder, and they support on-trade operators by giving them support, advice, and raising awareness around kind of the challenges of mental health within the hospitality industry, which I think is really important because, as we both know, it's a really, really challenging industry to work in, both physically and mentally demanding. And I think if we want a healthy hospitality industry going forward, there needs to be more support and investment and advice that goes into, you know, good mental health support for hospitality workers, because I think otherwise, you know, people will continue to move away from that career path. And I think that would be a huge shame if people do. So the work they're doing is just brilliant, you know, and I'm really pleased to be able to in some way support that. It's only a small amount, but, you know, each unit, there's 10 pence that will go towards those organisations. And I thought about doing a 10% of profits kind of scheme, but then when I got into that, it was like, I might not make any profit in the first couple of years. So 10% of nothing is nothing. So what's the point in doing that? And then I had a really good conversation with someone who, again, sort of, I really value their opinion, and they're a B Corp business. And he said, well, why don't you look at doing a, you know, per unit contribution? And that's where the 10 pence from every unit came from. And the positive progress plan is what I've called it. And for me, it's, you know, it's all about making positive progress. How can I make other people help? How can I help other people make positive progress in their life? And, you know, taking a break from alcohol and sharing the joys and benefits of that and running are the two priorities for me going forward.
Hey, hey, I will get you back to the episode in just a second. But first, a quick word from our sponsors. Me. That's right. This week's episode is sponsored by Low No Drinker Magazine, the number one UK magazine for sober curious drinkers. Each issue is packed full of news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. You can subscribe to Low No Drinker Magazine and read your copy online or in print anywhere in the world. And subscriptions start from just £3.45. Get your subscription today and use code LONOPOD to get 20% off your first two issues over at lonodrinkermagazine.com. With 24 years of experience in hospitality myself, I know firsthand just how intense an environment it can be and just how far down the rabbit hole you can go. The We Recover Loudly podcast, hosted by Shel Regini, aims to show people that it is possible to recover from these destructive patterns and to still work within the industry they love. Shel talks to front of house and back of house team members, interviewing everyone from chefs and bartenders to managers and operations, as well as mental health professionals, about the reasons why there is so much addiction, burnout, anxiety and depression in the industry. She asked the question, if alcohol and drugs were never the problem, but the solution, then what changes do we all need to make to allow the hospitality industry and its people to survive and thrive? Subscribe now to We Recover Loudly, wherever you get your podcasts. And now, back to the show.
Amazing. Amazing. I love that. I love charities like that. There's another one, that's the We Recover Loudly podcast, which is also run by Michelle, who is from a hospitality background. And yeah, that's been a similar journey to us. So, and causes like that and the Burnt Chef. I've seen so many of my own teams burn out in spectacular ways due to hospitality and drinking. And of course, in hospitality, it's never just drinking. You know, drugs are all never too far away from it all. So I think that's absolutely wonderful that you're supporting them. And to say it's not very much, I don't think is fair to yourself, because, you know, you are helping. And not only are you donating and you're helping financially, but you're raising awareness. So I'll make sure they are linked in the show notes below, so people can go and check out those resources as well and see how they can help and support your great cause. So thanks for sharing that.
Thank you. Yeah, I love Michelle. Me and Michelle have met and chatted a lot, actually. We both, funny enough, launched our podcasts at around the same time. So we've had a lot in common.
I'm noticing that, right? The community around the low and no, you know, it's kind of like when you're working in hospitality, right? And you all kind of build these relationships and these connections, you get close. I noticed that the low no community is very similar to that. There are a lot of people that just want to reach out and just want to connect with each other. And want to help each other. You know, everyone I speak to is always like, oh, have you spoken to this person, or you should check this out. And I love that. Whilst when we first tell other people that we're cutting back, you do, I got it too. I got the, oh, really? Or don't be silly. Or how long's that going to last then? But within this community, everyone is like, come on in, pull up a pew, let's do it together, let's chat. And I think that's what we need to keep doing more of.
So supportive. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And, you know, going on an alcohol-free journey is something that only you as an individual can do. You know, you can't force other people to go on their own. They've got to be ready. One thing I realise is, you know, if you do want to make a change like that in your life, you've got to be ready to do it for yourself. You can't do it for anyone else. And but it is, because you're swimming against the tide, you know, you're going against what most of society you know, assumes is normal or sees as normal, and that's drinking alcohol. You know, you can find it's quite lonely, and I found that at the end of last year, I found myself feeling quite lonely, if you like. And you're absolutely right that the great thing about the alcohol-free category within the wider drinks category is a lot of the brands are, yes, there's your Heineken Zeros and your Guinness Zeros and your Tanqueray Gin, Gordon Zeros, that kind of thing, which, you know, they're, in some ways it sometimes feels like they're a bit of a tick box exercise for the major drinks brand alcohol producers to have, because they recognise the growth in alcohol-free. But at the same time, they're really important to have because they raise awareness. But a lot of the brands in the alcohol-free space are founder-led brands, you know, and you look at the likes of, you know, Elliot Coleño and, you know, Unlimited with Johnny, and I know you've had Johnny on, it's great to see, and what these other brands and the individuals that start them do, you know, it's their own journey that they go on, and their sole focus is the alcohol-free part of the industry. So you're right, it is so supportive, and you know, some of the communities that are out there now are really important and really valuable for people who kind of decide they want to go on this journey, but maybe feel that sense of, you know, it's a little bit lonely. You're by yourself and your closest group of mates. The chances are it's only you doing this, you know, and then suddenly you find yourself not really wanting to go to pubs all the time. You want to do other stuff. There's other things that you get time back and you realize you want to spend your time doing other things. So, yeah, so that community aspect is brilliant within the alcohol-free space.
It is. It really is. Rich, talk to me a little bit more about Clean Break in itself. So you've told me a bit about the inspiration for the design around the can and the journey that's got you here. How's it been going in real terms for the last 3 months? So it's not a very long time, I know, but it must feel like a bit of a whirlwind. But I'm seeing you more and more on Instagram in various places. You know, you're getting out there. How are you finding that reach to get out to consumers and to bars and to independents? What's the reaction been like that you've been receiving from people?
Yeah, so the reaction has been fantastic, actually. I've already won an award with IWSC, which I completely forgot I'd entered, if I'm honest with you. It was pre-launch. And then I got an email from them saying, oh, congratulations, you won a silver, 91 points. I was like, bloody hell, that's good. Which is great. And the reaction has been amazing, you know, the response to the liquid, to the brand, to the sort of the ethos and kind of what I'm trying to do. Because, you know, for me, the beer is just a vehicle for me to do what I want to do. And the real overarching mission, if you like, and the vision for the brand is much bigger than just an alcohol-free beer brand. It's you know, got lifestyle brand wrapped up into it and, you know, all that kind of thing. So the reaction has been amazing. You know, the brand building part of it is great. It's great fun. And especially when, you know, it's something that means so much to you, like it does with me, you know, and you know, really building something, creating something that has a lot of me put into it. And it makes it so much easier when that's the case, when you're going out and selling it to people, when you're talking to people about it. It's not just like I haven't just chosen to stick it in a gold bottle or sprinkle it with unicorn dust or something like that, or some other kind of marketing BS, like, which would be the easy, quick route to success to go down. But, you know, that's not what I've chosen to do. You know, I want to build something that's authentic and that's got longevity. And, you know, I want to bring people on that journey with me. So the brand building part of it's going brilliantly. I've obviously got Kristen on board and she's been a huge help on social media. It takes that weight off my shoulders. The reality when it comes to the commercial side and the sales side of it, if again, being open and honest, is probably quite different. You know, you're in a category which has got a huge growth opportunity and it will continue to grow. And anyone who doesn't think that the alcohol-free sector is going to continue to grow and people are going to continue to drink less alcohol is, you know, daft, really, if I'm honest with you. You know, you kind of need to be aware to that. But because of that, and because of the fact that it's never been easier to launch a drink your own drinks brand, there's a lot of new brands coming to market. You know, every established brewery has got their own alcohol-free option. They've already got the benefit of having their brand name out there, their reach, distribution into supermarkets and multiple retailers and across bars and pubs and restaurants nationally. So for someone like Heineken or Gordon's or Tanqueray or Guinness, it's just an easy tag in. You know, it's literally just, oh, we've got this as an add-on to our product range. Take this and we'll put this into, you know, this will form part of our agreement with you, you know, our commercial agreement with you. So for little old me, you know, where I've got a startup fund, you know, startup founder-led business with, you know, self-funded with a, you know, a few thousand pounds put into it from our remortgage of our house, you know, and that's all gone now and it's pretty bloody hard. It's hit a bit of a brick wall now. Part of the reason for that is the fact that I've had to take my foot off the gas in the last 4 weeks because of school holidays. So I just haven't been able to be as productive on the beer brand as I would like to have been, because the kids have had to take priority. Then I've also needed to generate some income somewhere. So I've been doing some consultancy work a couple of days a week. So the reality is that I haven't been able to invest as much time as I would like to in the beer, but there's a plan. You know, I've got a plan that's what I'm sort of actioning now. You know, that involves, you know, looking to raise some investment in, you know, develop the improve the cash flow, which will enable me to step back from doing the consultancy work in the coming month or so, so that I can sort of knowingly be able to take a totally nominal, you know, literally break even amount of salary out of the business, to be able to live, put food on the table for the kids and pay the bills, but also to be able to focus 100% onto Clean Break, and really move that forward. And I've also realized that, you know, as great as it's been doing this by myself, it's been really liberating to not have to get any validation from anyone else. I've also got to the point now where I feel I've bought it as far as I can just by myself. So I'm sort of, I've recognized that I need to bring other people on board and sort of build a team around me, really, of you know, a board of advisors, people who can offer a bit of knowledge, experience, contacts, a bit of time, and a bit of money investment in return for a small amount of equity in the business as well. And I think that's the way I'm going to go forward, as well as taking out a new business loan, and then that will hopefully enable me to really invest in the areas that I need to raise awareness, because you can't just flick on a switch. It's not like, oh, I've got a product, now what do I do with it? You flick on a switch. And I think some people do end up having that realization really early. They make a product without thinking about what they're going to do when they've made the product. My background in on-trade helps, because I kind of know the supply chain and the network and contact. So I've started close to me and got listings locally to me in on-trade venues, which has been great. Draft for on tap and for cans, which has been brilliant. But I don't have a national distribution network to lean on to get that further afield at the moment. That will come with time. But the priority for me at the moment is focused building the distribution locally in the on-trade, so that the, you know, that kind of awareness of the brand sort of spreads, and rather than sort of going all guns blazing and throwing mud at a wall to see what sticks nationwide. You know, I don't want to do that. I don't want to dilute the brand name. I want the brand to grow strongly from this hub in Leeds, you know, out into other parts of the north, into Manchester, Liverpool, you know, York, Sheffield, those kind of places, and then kind of look to grow it on-trade-wise nationwide. Alongside that, obviously the D2C side of the business is kind of where the sort of the most profitable part of the business comes from. But, you know, that again doesn't happen overnight. You know, it's not just, I've got this brand, Instagram's up, Facebook's up, flick a switch, there you go. You know, you've got to gain followers, you know, and I don't want to just go down the route of buying them. You know, I would like to generate that as much as organically as I possibly can, you know, and then you've got to drive traffic to your website. The stuff that I've done so far that I've created by myself, essentially, I've kind of gone with the attitude of good enough is good enough. So like the website, for example, when I launched, it was good enough, but it's not good enough for now. You know, it needs to get better. It needs tweaking. It needs some of those rough edges chiseling off. And likewise, some of the other sort of parts of the business need the same. So that's why, A, I need some other people to help me. B, I need some of that investment to come in to support the cash flow to be able to invest in the right areas. I'm not going to go down the route of multiple SKUs. It will be pale ale, lager, possibly an IPA later. But I think the two is a good route to go down, given that, you know, lager still makes up the vast majority of the liquid consumed both in alcohol and alcohol-free beer. I think for me that, you know, the thing that stands out really around this as well is both in terms of the beer and the running, is connection is key for me, you know. And I think it's so important when... What I've recognized since I've started my alcohol-free journey is the connections that I've made with other people have been, A, amazing, but also, you know, much more kind of visceral and real than ever before. And I think, you know, we do, despite not drinking alcohol, we do crave connection. And so I think it's so important for venues, operators, hospitality venues to recognize that and see this growing market and offer a good alcohol-free range so that the non-drinkers can come in and feel included in the, you know, in the experience. And I think hospitality is moving into a new era of where we were kind of, it was always focused on people getting pissed. I think now it's people going to great hospitality venues for connection. And the connection is the main thing, whether that is if you're drinking or not, that should be immaterial. You know, it's the connection which is important. So, and then likewise, you know, for me running and having started 3 running groups myself this year, it's the connections that I've made through the running groups have been amazing.
And also, you know, I think going back to what you were saying before about the team and the business and what you need to help grow, I think it's really important to be able to recognize that when you've reached a certain circumstance where you need to have other people come on board. You know, I think you're right. When we do these things as a solo founder as well, you take a lot of pride, don't you? And I've done this. I've created this. I built it from the ground up all by myself.
Yeah.
But there's not a single successful business out there in any sector that's just run by one solo person. We need people around us. We need teams. We need experience. We need advocates and mentors and guidance and people who know more about things than we do. So I think it's perfectly reasonable that you're now in the stage where you've got everything up off the ground, you've got it up and running, and now you're ready to bring on a team to help you take it to the next level.
Yeah,
so I'm hoping that someone listening here is going to be able to go, I know how to do that. And if you do, then I beseech you to reach out to Rich and give him a shout, because I think it's a great brand and it deserves the help to get it to the next level.
Yeah. And you know, I'm sort of fully aware of A, what I'm good at, but also what I'm not so strong at, you know, and where I need help in. And, you know, I'm very good at doing the things that I'm good at. I'm not so good at doing the things I'm not so good at. And I think this idea of teamwork has become, this period that I've had over the last four, six weeks with the kids being off school, as much as it's been frustrating not being able to be productive on the beer and focus on the beer, it's actually been really good for me, partly because it's meant, you know, we've spent time with the kids and, you know, that kind of thing, but also because it's helped me realise the importance of teamwork. And, you know, the best team player that I've got in my life is my wife, Bridget. So, you know, knowing that I couldn't do this without her, you know, both this journey in terms of the beer, but also the journey with the kids and the family, you know, we couldn't do this alone. And the support that we offer each other is so vitally important. And funny enough, just this morning, we had a conversation on the phone where she was fairly upset and I had to just appease her around, everything's going to be all right. Don't worry, love. So it's just this knowing that this, you know, the working on things as a team is so important. And that's just kind of reinforced to me where I was a bit like, you know, can I do it myself? Can I just go down the route of getting the new business loan? Can I keep, you know, going myself? But then I thought actually, I'm just being stubborn. And do you know what? There are so many brilliant people out there that, you know, could come on board and help and support and help me not just make Clean Break a success, but, you know, make it, you know, an incredible success, a huge success, you know, achieve that some of the things that some of the other brands out there that have done. And, you know, I look at the likes of, you know, the incredible work that people like Lucky Saint and the things that like Athletic Brewing have achieved. And I just think, you know, look, we can, you know, the aspiration is there to do the same with Clean Break.
And a big shout out to Bridget as well, because, you know, I completely understand that the support of a spouse is invaluable when you're doing these things, because you get your head down, don't you? And you get into what you're doing and the kids are still there and they still need feeding and they still need attention and the house still needs cleaning. And I completely understand, you know, that sort of the need to have somebody there who's prepared to support you and encourage you along the way. And you're right, the last few weeks for me as well, having my big one off school, my little one's still in nursery, but still, you know, you're in that phase, aren't you, where you want to keep working because you know you've got stuff to do, but you want to give your kids the time that they deserve, because that's the whole point of you doing these things in the first place. You like to be able to build a life that you can enjoy with your family.
Yeah.
Getting that balance
it's a challenge and a half.
Isn't it? It's such a juggling act. And, you know, being able to surrender to these things, I think, is a skill that I'm learning at the moment as well. You know, when you can sort of surrender to the things that you can't change, you know, and really accept that there's only two things in our lives that we can fully 100% control, and that's our thoughts or our beliefs and our actions. You know, everything else is to some degree out of our control. So if you can sort of accept that and almost surrender to the things that you can't control, that's a big weight off your shoulders, you know. And funnily enough, I'm doing some other stuff as well at the moment, you know, some positive psychology coaching diploma course, which is really rewarding. And I'm doing in the Dry App, DRYY, which is a great alcohol-free social media space for people who are sober curious or taking a break from booze. And I do a weekly Saturday morning live in there at 7:30, where I kind of share some of my musings. And I'm generally out on a run. So it's kind of the sort of the almost like the Mr. Motivator of Saturday mornings, you know, out on my run, kind of sort of positive psychology stuff, talking a little bit about. And I talked about this idea of surrendering to, you know, being able to surrender to things that we can't control. And it's really liberating when you're able to do that.
Amazing. Rich, it has been amazing talking to you. I've got two more questions before I let you go. So one is one that I like to ask everyone that I speak to, because as we were saying beforehand, talking about community and sharing the love for the Lono way of life. So I pose this one to everyone. It's a lovely sunny day and you're off out to a barbecue. Other than the phenomenal clean break, what other Lono beers or drinks do you like to take with you to enjoy on a nice day out?
Yeah, oh, that's a great question. I mean, like, I do really enjoy pretty much anything that Mash Gang have produced. Their beers are phenomenal. And they, you know, it's they do things a bit differently, you know. It's you know, it really is ripping up the rule book, which is really exciting to see. In terms of kind of your spirits, there's some really cool sort of spirit alternatives that have come onto market. And what I really like in the category in particular is the spirit alternatives that aren't just trying to replicate the flavors and the styles of existing alcohol spirits. So, you know, the things that are just like, oh, we're an alcohol-free gin. Technically, there's no such thing as an alcohol-free gin because legislatively it has to be 37.5%. But I won't go into that. I used to work for a gin company, by the way, so that's why I know that. But, you know, and you know, there is a place for that. And I see that some people just want that association and people, you know, want to put things into boxes. But I really like things like Bativo, for example. I don't know if you've tried that, which is insane. And it's just like nothing else you've tried. You know, there isn't an alcoholic equivalent to it. It's got that kind of, you know, sort of aperitif style flavor to it. You know, that bittersweet flavor to it. It's got a bit of viscosity, a bit of mouthfeel. It pairs really well with just like soda or tonic water. And some of those other aperitifs, Wilfrid's is like another one, for example. Is it Anon as well? Do a really nice one. And then, you know, I actually really like making an alcohol-free Negroni, using some of those things. And then, you know, taking one of your sort of your alcohol-free gin alternatives. Ellie's Calenio, what she's doing is fantastic. So those guys, Myth Coconut, I love Colette Smith Coconut, is amazing. That pairs really well, I found, with Tropical Red Bull, funnily enough.
Ooh. Okay, that's different.
Give that a go. Yeah, and then wines. Wine is, you know, I think it's safe to say wine is still the category which hasn't perhaps really cracked it yet, but there are some great brands out there. Amanda Thompson's Naughty is brilliant, especially the sparkling. Accolade have introduced one into Morrison's. It's called And Then, which is a Cabernet Sauvignon. I've still yet to try that brand called Zeno, which apparently is really good. Oh, you've got a bottle there. Yeah, so I need to try some of that, and just, you know, some of the plethora of alcohol free beers and the quality of alcohol free beers on the market now is just insane. You know, you just, like, for me, I don't miss alcoholic beer at all because there's so much choice in a non alcoholic space. So those are the things that I enjoy.
Amazing, amazing. Rich, where do you want people to go when they want to find out more about you and your amazing drink and your fabulous activities, your running, everything? Where should we send people to go and find you?
Yeah, well, website for Clean Break is www.cleanbreakbrewing.com. If you head there, you can read about the story, read about the values of the brand, and you know, you can obviously buy as well. We've got it in 12 pack and multiples of, but then I've also started doing 4 packs, which I actually do the fulfillment myself of at the moment, because it just links into Royal Mail click and drop, and it's the easiest way for me to do it. So if you're unsure about getting a 12 pack, 4 packs a really good option, 13.5 quid including delivery, which I think it represents really good value. And then Instagram pages as well. So @CleanBreakBrewing is the Instagram page, which then also feeds into Facebook. And then my running stuff is based around running dry. So running dry DRYY_Rich or running dry _Leeds is my running dry group for Leeds. And then Finding Jomo is my alcohol-free podcast, which I've put on hold for summer, but I will relaunch in the autumn and get that up and running again, because I know a lot of people enjoy that.
Wonderful, wonderful. I will make sure that all of those links are noted in the show notes below, or you can find them on the websites, and I'll link to everything everywhere so everyone can come and find you. Rich, it has been a real joy and a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your patience and your understanding and all the technical issues that we had in getting to each other. And thank you for your time today.
Oh, Denise, no, it was my fault. My PC wasn't good enough and powerful enough for us to do it on there, but we got there in the end. But no, well, thank you so much for having me on.